You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK. Whoa, oh, oh, oh.
The Punt Podcast, in association with the FWA.
Genuinely wants to spend the rest of his career at Tottenham Hotspur. I think he's mad.
I'm sorry, how can he escape Flash? It's unbelievable.
So this is an obvious snap. It's a team in great form at home against a team who just aren't that good.
I think he'll score some goals in League One. It's 17 to 10 any time. Deadly from set pieces and in the air.
Right, the boss is up for manager of the month. They've been phenomenal. They're odds against. Love it, love it, love it.
Subscribe to The Punt on iTunes, listen on Audio Boom, or look out for the link on Twitter or on William Hill's Facebook page.
Hello and welcome to the Punt Podcast here at William Hill. Alex Dunn in the presenter's chair this week because Dave Kellner said it's International Week and he couldn't be bothered, which is an interesting line. Andy Excel's on the line, so is Derek McGovern. Derek, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Who does Kellner think he is? Ryan Giggs? Kellner's bothered with international matches and friendlies.
That's exactly what Kellner announced, his international retirement a few years ago, actually. Mr. Excel, how are you?
I'm all right. I'm not retiring from anything.
Good. Right, we've got a cracking week of international football coming up. And I use that term loosely. But it is the UEFA Nations League, which I'm sure you've all been very much looking forward to. By the way, later on the podcast, Sam Wallace from The Telegraph will be joining myself and Derek, and we'll be discussing things slightly closer to home, the likes of Spurs and the next manager to leave, etc., etc. But we'll get to that shortly. Now, my colleague and yours, chaps, that's Lee Phelps. Did you know he's also a UEFA delegate?
Get out of it.
He is?
Well, he goes to the buffets, obviously.
Well, he has slightly more of an idea on the UEFA Nations League than most of us. Shall we hear from him now?
Go on, then.
The UEFA Nations League, then. A new trophy to win promotion and relegation and a proper, meaningful programme of internationals. I'm going to explain what it's all about. There are 55 UEFA-recognised nations. Now, they're divided into four leagues based on their rankings, with the best sides placed in League A, England, of course, the worst in League D, we're talking Liechtenstein. The rest are somewhere in between. Those four leagues are then split into four groups containing three or four teams each. Groups A and B have four groups of three teams. Group C has one group of three and three groups of four. Group D has four groups of four. You keeping up? The group phase ends in November when all the sides have played one another home and away. It all hots up in June as each of the group winners from League A face each other in the semi-finals. The winners of those two semi-finals will compete in the final on June the 9th, 2019. That decides the first ever UEFA Nations League winner. Fanfare. Countries will be promoted or relegated based on performance as well. This is new. Teams that finish bottom of their respective groups will be relegated to the league below, replaced by countries who finish top of their groups. Nice and simple. Now, I know you're thinking, where does the European Championships fit into all this? Well, that qualification starts in March 2019. The top two in each group will qualify automatically for Euro 2020, leaving four spots to be filled. This is where the Nations League comes in. The last four places will be decided by playoffs in March 2020, and each Nations League will provide one of the qualifying countries. Each league has four spots to allocate for the playoffs, with group winners given first priority. If they've already qualified for Euro 2020 through the usual means, their place will be handed down to the next highest-ranked team from their league, which has not already qualified. If they can't find enough teams for the playoffs from a certain league, as is likely in League A, they will go and grab some teams from a lower league to make up the numbers. I must stress here, UEFA aren't just making this up as they go along. The four teams will then play two one-off semi-finals and one final in March 2020 to decide the qualifier from each league. The Nations League therefore gives every team in League D an alternative route to the European Championships. Congratulations to Azerbaijan, Macedonia, Belarus, Georgia, Armenia, Latvia, the Faroe Islands, Luxembourg, Kazakhstan, Moldova, Liechtenstein, Malta, Andorra, Kosovo, San Marino, or Gibraltar. It also pretty much provides a safety net for the bigger, underperforming countries. So there you go. UEFA simplifying international football.
Pretty straightforward, lads, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it clears all that. Well done, Luke. Yeah. It seems to me it's just a new way for Scotland not to qualify for anything.
simple as Derek's tax return.
Yes, exactly.
What are they? I've looked at it, honestly, I'm glad Lee did all that. I've looked at it about 50 times, but still no idea. I listened to Lee, still no idea how it works. But I've got the same views on Roy Hodgson as well. Someone said the best way to describe it is it's a cross between the Champions League and the Intertoto Cup. So, you know, there you go. Clears up everything now. You know everything.
Oh, easy. Yeah. Right, shall we start by talking about some actual football that's happening?
Yeah, why not?
Wales against the Republic of Ireland coming up on Thursday evening. Wales are 19-20. The draw is 2-1. The Republic of Ireland are 7-2. Wales have never beaten the Republic of Ireland in a competitive game, Derek, which this is. And Gareth Bale's made a flying start in the Liga, hasn't he?
Yes, he has. Yeah, well, he was always going to be. I think a lot of Real Madrid players will come out of the woodwork now. The posing powder has gone. I think we'll see a better Real Madrid team. And I think Gareth Bale, sensational player, will come into his own. But you're right. I think it's eight times Wales have played Republic of Ireland. And they haven't beaten them once. And that tells you one thing. I almost certainly back Wales. A Wales win every time. Most recently, the Ireland won 1-0 in Wales last year in a qualifier for the World Cup. They haven't lost any of their last six away matches, Ireland, and they've kept a clean sheet in six of the last seven games against Wales. It's all pointing to one thing. This match, even with Gareth Bale in the Wales side, looks the first half of the scoreline looks as though they're going to be Wales 0. And then will Republic score? No, I don't think they will. I think this will be a 0-0 draw.
6-1 available for that. There's plenty of enhanced odds on the William Hill website and your odds markets as well if you do think that there will be goals. Wales to score in both halves, for example, 3-7-2. Derek's not a fan of that. Mr. XL, are you?
No, I can see this being a draw myself as well. That game between Wales and Ireland last year, basically Wales dominated and Ireland just caught them with a sucker punch, appropriately from James McLean possibly. But They don't score many Wales. They've only scored two goals in two of the last 13 games. But they don't score many, even with Bale in the team. They like to be a counter-attacking team, and they won't get to do that against Ireland because they're the international equivalent of parking the bus. So, yeah, I'd be on the draw here at 2-1.
OK. If you do fancy Bale to score at any time, is 23-20 in this game. There are plenty of markets to take a look at, but the draw is 2-1. The 0-0 draw is 6-1. You've both absolutely killed any optimism I had for this game on Thursday. but to be fair, I wouldn't be touching Wales at odds on, though. I think that you've got to have some kind of pro-Ireland bet, whether that is the draw or not. Republic of Ireland or the draw in the betting, or Republic of Ireland on the handicap plus a goal. You can get that at 3-4, which I don't think is too bad at all in that one. But that's coming up on Thursday night, Wales against the Republic of Ireland. Oh, they're coming for you, Derek.
Men in white coats, no doubt.
I was going to say. Right.
That's outside my door, worryingly.
Oh, really? Oh, dear. It's all right, Andy. You've done nothing wrong. Right, we've got Scotland-Belgium coming up next. Now, this is a friendly. This is not a Nations League game. So make of that what you will. I don't know what to make of it. Anyway, Scotland-Belgium coming up on Friday at 7:45. And it's priced up with Scotland at 5-1. The draw 17-5. Belgium are twos on. There's nothing not to like about Belgium here, Andy, with the exception of the price.
Well, yeah, but even that, I think, is still a good price. You've got a team that arguably was the best team in the World Cup. I mean, they got turned over by France when, you know, France accepted that Belgium were probably better than them. But, yeah, I think the price here, and even to win 2-0, Scotland's top scorer, they've got two players in the team who have got amassed a grand total of 7 goals each. And that's their top scorer. So they're less prolific than Wales. The Belgium to win 2-0 at small odds against, I think it's around 5-4. That'd be all right for me.
Okay. Belgium have been flying, obviously, during the World Cup, Derek. Scotland, meanwhile, narrowly missed out on the World Cup and since then have played 5 friendlies and lost 4 of them and haven't scored in any of those games. They did win one of them, which I think was away at Hungary. I think that tells you all you need to know, really.
Well, yeah. Well, if that's not enough to tell you, well, they've got Alex McLeish as manager for the second time. So you didn't think it was going to didn't think it was bad enough for Scotland football. Big Ed comes in and manages them. He seems the only gaffer in football who seems happy with a point at home and none away. In which case, he's tailor-made for the Scotter thing. Aston Villa fans never even warmed to him. That was after they'd taken Birmingham down. It's amazing that he's still in top-level football. Well, football anyway. Belgium's only defeat in their last 26 matches came in that game against France that you mentioned in the World Cup. They beat England twice in the World Cup. One more time, they would have got to keep them. And what's more, Scotland have said they will use this match to experiment. They might even try to play football, someone said. I've got to say, it's an absolute nailed-on away win. Belgium, if you can get odds against, as you can, for Belgium to win without the Scots scoring, well, it's buying money.
Okay. If you are looking for a little bit more value, as you heard from the guys there, Belgium to win to nil, or you could back Belgium and under 2.5 goals is 23-10 if you don't think they're going to go to town on the Scots, or Belgium and over 2.5 is 11-8. But hopefully there's a little bit of value to be found. And as always with these games, I'd just hang fire for team news, just in case Belgium decide to rest their world-class players and replace them with slightly less than world-class players. But we shall see anyway. That's coming up on Friday night. As for Saturday's action, we start at 2 o'clock with Northern Ireland against Bosnia. This is back in the Nations League. This is League B. It's 21-10 for Northern Ireland. The draw is 9-5 and Bosnia 13-8. And Michael O'Neill, in charge of the Northern Irish, is now the fifth longest serving manager in Europe. So that's interesting, isn't it, Derek?
It is. More interesting in the game. Bosnia Herzegovina, half the Irish fans thought that was a Wonderbra model. I didn't know it was the opponent this weekend. I've looked at this game every which way. The only thing I know is that it ain't going to be a thriller. The two sides have never met each other. I suppose it isn't a surprise, really. I've got no idea. Every time there's a Northern Ireland game, unless they're playing a good team away from home, and then you know what Northern Ireland will do. They'll park the bus and maybe sneak a late win in and scupper everybody's bets. Other than that, I've got no idea how they'll play. I've got no idea about Bosnia-Herzegovina. I've done it. You might say, well, hang on, do a bit of research if you're on a podcast. Well, I have done, and I still can't find out anything about them. it's an impossible match to call this. And to further muddy the waters, you've got no idea what kind of side, what kind of squads, what kind of team that the two managers are going to put out. At this point, I think you get 2-1 for the draw, and it seems to me that a draw in this will suit both sides. You've got to go for that. You've got to play safe in this one.
Draw, now 9-5, actually, the draw in this Northern Ireland-Bosnia clash. If you are looking for goal scorers, Edin Dzeko is the obvious place to start for Bosnia. He's 29-20 to score any time. And for Northern Ireland, Josh McGuinness has made a flying start to the championship season, and he's 27-10 to score at any time. But, Andy, I think it speaks volumes that this game is priced up at 2-1 for over 2.5 goals, 4-11 for under 2.5, which, obviously, you bring the trading perspective. That's kind of, I'd call that Argentine prices. I mean, we don't get many games domestically that are priced up like that, unless maybe it was a Burnley game.
Well, yeah, but the person I feel sorry for here, and I've been getting loads of requests, please don't put me on this game from the guys that are doing it in my office. Northern Ireland haven't scored in 5 of their last 6. Bosnia haven't scored in 4 of their last 6. This is going to be a thriller. Can we move on? 2-1 the draw.
Yep, fine. Okay. So we're sticking with the draw for both here. And if you do think it's going to be 0-0, it's 4-1. It's phenomenally short.
That's the shortest 0-0 I can ever remember.
Yeah.
That is incredible, isn't it? 4-1 for a 0-0. Jesus.
Yeah, it's not the most inspiring. On the other hand, if you do just want to back over 1.5 goals in the game, 6-10 is probably the biggest price you'll ever see on such
What's
a market.
Exactly 1.5 goals? What price is that?
Oh, I couldn't tell you. Right, that is the Northern Ireland-Bosnia game. That's coming up on Saturday at 2 o'clock. And the final game that we're going to mention in detail on this podcast comes at 7:45. It's England against Spain. And it's quite an attractive fixture, even for a neutral. 17-10 for both England and Spain. The draw is 21-10. That tells me, Mr. Excel, that the traders are playing this with a fair degree of caution, and probably rightly so.
Yeah, I mean, again, this is a running theme through this. if people want to put draws in multiples this week, any week, this is the week. Spain have drawn 6 of the last 9, which I didn't realise until I looked it up. England's last 3 friendlies at Wembley against any decent teams, 0-0 Germany, 0-0 Brazil, 1-1 Italy. So, to me, there's not going to be a lot in this either. I think England's World Cup performance has been overhyped. They got further than they deserved to get just through an easier route. So I'm still not convinced by them. And Spain, yeah, are they on the wane? I think they probably are. They haven't got anybody up front who's in any great form at the moment. So the draw again for me.
Okay, then. What about you, Derek?
Well, you're right about England's performance in the World Cup being overhyped. They got to the World Cup semi-final despite winning only one of their last 5 competitive matches in 90 minutes. I mean, if you think that's amazing, what about this? England got to the World Cup semi-finals with Gareth Southgate as manager. He's to international management, Southgate, what he was to international football. I can't have England. Can't possibly have England. I think mostly they're about Harry Kane, and right now he couldn't hit a cow's backside with a banjo, Harry Kane. But he started the season badly. A couple of their best players have pulled out injured, Raheem Sterling being one of them. The last time, one thing in England's favour is the last time they lost in a competitive match at home was that 3-2 defeat against Croatia. You remember in 2007, I think it was, the night of the Wally with the Brolly.
Yeah.
With Steve McClaren. McClaren later went on to manage Nottingham Forest, who said they would have preferred to appoint the Brolly, by the way. I've got to go for a draw. One thing you know from Spain, you're going to get the ticky-tacky of tiny feet from Spain. That's the way they play. And it's served them well down the years, but maybe not so much now. Lack of a top-class striker as well. I mean, even if Diego Costa was playing, and he isn't, I would still think they lack the top-class striker. You know my feelings on him. It does look a nailed-on draw, this one.
Do you think England will mix it up a bit? Obviously, during the World Cup, they kept largely the same team, the same system. Do you think there's a chance that we will see a few fringe players starting here?
Well, you'd expect to, because it's a glorified friendly, this, isn't it? And, you know, I know there are a few. It might be competitive for the smaller nations, this competition, because there's a place in the Euros at stake. But this is a glorified friendly to me, and England should experiment. But whether they will, I don't know. It's a difficult one to call. And if they do experiment, you just wonder who will come in and how many, you know, which players are... There isn't an England player right now. I look down the squad, and there isn't an England player right now that makes me think he's going to have a good game. He's in form. I'm looking forward to seeing him play. Not a single one. Arguably, you could say the same about Spain as well. But, you know, this competition, this UEFA Nations League has done away largely with international friendlies. Well, that's half the battle. The next thing to do is do away with internationals. It just leaves me cold.
Okay. Another cheery end to a preview there from Derek McGovern. Crikey, Derek. Oh, dear.
He loves international league.
So you're both going with the draw in the end?
Yes.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind. Andy's right. This could be one. You know, when you see all the results come through, remember when you used to watch teletext, where, you know, when you through your fingers, see the results come through on teletext because you'd had a bet and you had one, you know, all rested on one. When you see the results coming through in these games, I think you're going to see a preponderance of stalemates.
Okay. So another draw, the selection then between England and Spain. Right, let's move on to NAPS, shall we? And UEFA delegate Lee Phelps is back with an update because Mr McGovern's been doing rather well, I believe. Is that right, Derek?
There's 3 winning NAPS out of 4. I'm flying, absolutely flying. And you know what? You know, when you get in this stage and you think, I'm never going to tip a loser. And I feel like that now, even with the international weekend.
Look at that, right.
Isn't that great?
We'll get Derek's selection in just a moment then.
Are you sure this is right? What, 3 in a row? The NAPS table updates are back, and look at this. Hell's teeth. Derek McGovern, Chelsea, boom, 5-6. Leicester, boom, 21-10. And Wolves, boom, 9-5, plus £37.33. It's unheard of. What a great start to the season. So Derek leads the Naps table. Gives me great pleasure to say that. Gav Pujolowski, also terrible last season. He started well as well. Started like a train with three winning Naps. Two losses since then, but he's still in the black. Pete and Al, our other Football League experts. Two wins and three losses, so just in the red, but doing okay. No wins for the Euro boys. For Andy XL, but he's only picked two. DK and Mark Walton, our hosts so far this season. Four losses from four picks, minus £40. Must do better.
You don't need to, though, Derek. You're flying.
Oh, fabulous. And you're all agog, no doubt, to hear my winner this week.
Go on, then.
Estonia, 3-1 to beat Greece. Nailed on.
Okay.
Nailed on.
Any reason?
Loads. I'm not going into the mail.
Not telling, none of your business. Right, Estonia 3-1 to beat the Greeks, who are shocking, by the way. I'd imagine that's probably the main
that's
logic.
That's largely it, yeah.
Yeah.
And Estonia, God, you haven't seen a team like them.
Okay. Mr. XL, what are you going for?
The obvious 2-1 draw, Northern Ireland, Bosnia.
Okay.
9-5. Don't give them 2-1.
Oh, yeah, it is 9-5. It is. And as my tipping for the European portion of this podcast has been so awful, but so have DK's and Wally's so far, I'm going to put one in for the presenters. And I'm going for another classic. Between Belarus and San Marino, I'm saying under 3.5 match goals at 17-20. Because San Marino aren't going to score, and Belarus can't score, so it seems pretty logical. That'll be 2-0 to the home side, but 17-20 for under 3.5, because Kellner was begging me just to put up a winner, because he's been so poor so far this season. Anyway, there are Naps. You'll be hearing from the aforementioned Gav Pujolowski and Al Ross a little bit later on in the podcast. But next up, we're going to be hearing from Sam Wallace. He's going to join us on the line, us being myself and Mr. McGovern. That means we say farewell to you now, Mr. XL.
I'm off to try and escape the clutches of the police racing past my door.
Lovely. OK, well, let us know how you get on, and hopefully we'll be able to hear from you next week. As promised, Sam Wallace from The Telegraph now joins us on the line. Plenty to discuss today, domestically. We're going to start by talking about Tottenham, because after what was a fair start to the season, they had a 100% record, didn't they, after three games, including that win against Manchester United. They then lost at Watford, and all of a sudden there appears to be a little bit of unease at White Hart Lane, at wherever on earth they're going to be based for the time being anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it was an unusual result. I mean, it wasn't against a team at the bottom of the table, because Watford already had a 100% record. So in terms of the sort of unexpected nature of it, yes, you would expect Spurs ordinarily to win away at Watford, but this is a very different Watford team at the moment, also playing at home, a game that was switched, remember, it should have been a Spurs home fixture, but because of the changes to the scheduling of their stadium, it got switched. I have to say, I don't see it as the kind of complete disastrous early season result, in that they were playing, they're up against a form side. I think that you sort of hinted at what happened during the summer. Well, they famously didn't sign anyone in the summer. That has been portrayed in some quarters as a good thing. I think the big disadvantage to it is really that they didn't trade, so they didn't clear players out, and it was evident at the start of the summer there were a number of players that were ready to leave. Alderweireld, it looked like Moussa Dembele, who, despite being, you know, I think one of the best players in the Premier League, his contract wasn't going to be renewed, and therefore he was available, that Wanyama was available, that Rose was available, and that they were going to sort of kind of recharge the system a little bit. I think actually the most damaging part of their summer is that they haven't resolved the futures of those players, and I think they probably thought there'd be a better market for them than there actually was. In terms of the results itself, they have won at Old Trafford this season, which was whatever kind of However, you view United is still an outstanding result to go there and win 3-0. You can't, if you're going to challenge for the title, you obviously can't afford many days like Sunday, but they do happen. And yes, it was a bad one for Spurs, but relatively speaking, I think if Watford continue like this, there'll be a few good sides that struggle at Vicarage Road.
Yeah, quite possibly. I think one of the issues, Derek, having watched Spurs a fair bit so far this season, is just that their key players still look like they're having a bit of a World Cup hangover. They've managed to get results in the majority of games so far without looking like they're about to blow teams away, which, of course, over the last few years, they have been able to do pretty much at ease, haven't they?
Yeah, it's true. It's definitely a World Cup hangover, and I think Liverpool are being affected as well. They haven't really, even though they've got 12 points from four games, they're not exactly on top form. Some of their key players, Firmino's and Salah's and that, they're not firing at all. What Sam says about Spurs is right. They've got 9 points from four games so far. Okay, people expect them to win at Watford, but this is an informed Watford who could be, I'm not saying they're going to do another Leicester, but they're going to take a few scalps this season. And last season when they were crap, they beat Chelsea and Arsenal at Vicarage Road. So, it's not an absolute disgrace to go there. I suppose the manner of the performance, raised question marks, because it was a limp, lacklustre performance from Spurs. But that could equally be explained by what you just said, the World Cup hangover. How soon that gets, that gets diminished, how soon a player's become fully fit, I don't know. Why should they all of a sudden become fully fit unless they get a break? And these England friendlies and all, League of Nations matches that are coming up, I'm not giving some of their top players a break. I don't know what will happen there. But I wouldn't get worked up. They should have made signings in the summer, without question. People are saying, it was a good thing. They kept the unity of the squad, blah, blah, blah. Come on, you look at that squad now, and the first 11 Spurs put out look top-notch. Go below that, and there ain't that much there in reserve, and you ain't going to win the league like that.
I like the fact that you just called it the League of Nations as well. I think we should start calling it that.
Did I call it that? Yeah.
I think you did. Yeah, Sam, I saw an article that you wrote yesterday. Actually, one player who wasn't on international duty or isn't on international duty right now, and there's a whole load of Spurs players that are, which won't be helping them. One man that wasn't was Christian Eriksen. What on earth's going on with Denmark?
Yeah, it's a really interesting story. The fact that the Danish players are boycotting their. Well, they boycotted their friendly against Slovakia last night, and they play Wales on Sunday in Copenhagen in the Nations League. And as things stand, they're not going to be playing in that. It's pretty. They're on strike over a number of issues. One of which is the use of their image rights. What surprises me about this story is that the modern football world is constructed in such a way that the players really are kind of little corporations on their own, and they are fiercely protected by an agent and often the sort of kind of staff that they have, almost like a politician or a chief executive would have. So the notion that they kind of, this solidarity is what sort of fascinated me most about it, that they were prepared to really kind of mute their own reputations with the Danish public over this issue. It's complicated. I'm struggling for the right word. I don't want to do a disservice. I would say hardline chief executive of the Players Association in Denmark, their equivalent, the PFA, an individual called Mats Oland, who has also led the women's team out on strike, and he's advised the nation's handball players. That's a big sport over there. But essentially, the players are fed up with the commercial deals that the Danish Football Association is signing, getting in the way of their own individual commercial deals. For example, Simon Kjær, the Seville defender, had an agreement with a betting company before the World Cup, which clashed with the Danish FA's agreement with their own national lottery. So these issues have been brewing for a while. It's not something that's just happened in the last few months. But Eriksen's taken is really, the most high-profile player among them, and Kasper Schmeichel's up there, but he's not of Eriksen's status. And Eriksen is leading. I mean, he is putting out statements on behalf of the players. He's very much the face of this boycott, if you like.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that's pretty stressful, actually, because I think that a reasonable place that Denmark is, I should think that, feelings are running very, very high. And I wonder, I don't think it can I don't think you can do anything but affect you when you're placed in a very stressful situation like that. So it will be interesting to see, interesting to hear what he has to say about it. But as things stand, he is getting his World Cup rest this international break because he's not playing at all.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's no bad thing probably to Spurs fans, given that the majority of their squad are with England at present. So, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out, particularly next week once we are back to the domestic ground. There's plenty of betting available on the William Hill website for Spurs trophy specials. No trophy this season is 3-1 on. Obviously, there's individual trophy betting, and then you can double them up if you think that they're going to go crazy, which I don't think many people will. 40-1 for an FA Cup, League Cup double, or a Premier League and League Cup double, and 50s and bigger the rest of them. All available on the specials tab on the William Hill website. So that's sort of the top of the table, at least one team that we've mentioned. We're going to talk about the sack race, Derek, because it's something that seems to come up during every international break, a bit of a lull. I was astonished when I looked at this market today, as a Newcastle fan, to see Rafa Benitez the 9-4 favourite to go. Granted, during a transfer window, maybe, or pre-season, but now he knows what he's been given. Mike Ashley's not going to sack him, and Benitez won't walk away. I thought that was a very strange place to start, given that there are some managers that are already under pressure this season.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, who would you back? Rafa at 9-4 or Marino or even Pellegrini at 3-1?
Yeah.
Marino is in trouble, without question. I don't think the win over Burnley papers over the cracks at all. Something's not right there. And I wouldn't be surprised if he was out before Christmas, Marino. He's 3-1. But the one I like most, I don't think Matt Pellegrini's in trouble, by the way. West Ham have no points from four. Natives are getting restless, as they normally do in East End. But they played Arsenal and Liverpool away. I'd expect them to get much from those two fixtures. Okay, two home defeats are damaging, but we've got a lot of new players in there. And once they bed in, I think West Ham will be all right. They've got a strong enough squad. I mean, Palace didn't have a point after seven games last season and survived comfortably. So they're not a problem, and he'll stay Pellegrini. I'll just throw a price at you there. I think it's too big. 20-1, Sean Dyche, Burnley. Yeah. I know what he did last season. You know, he's got goodwill, etc. in the bank. But if I was a Burnley fan now, I'd be seriously worried. They're in the relegation zone. They're out of Europe, which he strove so long to get into. And you might say, well, surely he can't go after qualifying for Europe with them. Well, remember George Burnley for Ipswich? He won a Manager of the Season award when he guided Ipswich to fifth or sixth or something, the UEFA Cup in about 2001. Following season, they kept faith with them, even though they were struggling. They went down, and he got sacked the following season. 20-1 is too big for Sean Dyche.
Okay, interesting. There is one I thought Sam had a bigger price, at 10-1. I thought Neil Warnock was a little bit of value because he's already, I think, told everyone that he doesn't particularly like the Premier League. And let's face it, he's got an owner who is well-versed in getting rid of managers when he's not too happy with them.
Yeah, I would go along with that. I think he's always been relegated, hasn't he, Warnock, as well, when he's been in the Premier League. So, yeah, I don't...
I don't think he'll see the season out, put it that way.
No, I think you're right. I think they've not really assembled a squad. If you look at the other two sides that were promoted, in Fulham and Wolves, they've really gone for it in the transfer market. Mm. More or less sort of changed the whole... at least sort of 75% of the starting 11. So I think that there's probably a little bit of indecision there about whether they want to stay in this league or not, and they've not rolled the dice in that respect. Just on Dyche, I would point out he has been relegated before with Burnley and kept his job and brought him back up. And I think his connection with the board is so tight that I think they would really they know intimately the conditions under which he's working. They know the limitations placed upon him in terms of attracting players to Burnley and the salaries that they can pay. I think they would look at it and say, were they to go down, I don't think there's any chance of him being set before the end of the season. Were they to go down, I think they would ask themselves the question whether there was a better candidate to get them back up. I think a more realistic view of looking at it would be whether Dyche would feel, if they were to go down, which again, we're not saying they will, but whether he could sort of... whether he fancied, having to get a third promotion. So I think that he is arguably now the biggest figure, certainly in the club's modern history. You'd have to go back to 1960 and the league title winning team to find a more a more crucial, pivotal figure in Burnley's history. I just don't think... I think he is of the status of a Wenger or a Ferguson in that, at that club now, so I don't think he gets that.
Who is in danger then? We talked about Manuel Pellegrini just then. He's 3-1, joint second favourite to go. It would appear, on the face of it, that actually nothing's changed at West Ham. Plenty of personnel have, the manager has, but the results are pretty similar, and home defeats to Bournemouth and Wolves are exactly what has been happening for the last 2 years.
Well, the wage bill's gone up, that's changed. They've spent a fortune. I read a very persuasive piece by Dave Kidd in The Sun this week where he said if you actually look at his track record, and is that really he is a kind of sort of finishing touches manager to a real top team, a top group of players. This all looks a little bit kind of with the benefit of hindsight, but when you look at his title in 2013-14, it was United's biggest kind of chaos year. It was Mourinho's first year back at Chelsea. It was definitely a season of flux, and City took advantage of that. But in terms of the sort of rigour needed to wrench a club out of one position and put it in another to really change the culture of a place, I think it's reasonable to ask questions about whether he's the person to do that, and clearly what West Ham need.
Yeah. So where would your cash be going? Who is the next manager going to be to leave, Sam, in your opinion?
It's easy to sort of say, well, it's a Mourinho or a Benitez, but I don't feel that either of those two have the I'm not sure either of the ownership or kind of administrative structures have alternatives. I just don't see where they go for that. So I think I will go with Warnock.
Okay, Warnock 10-1, and also 10-1, Mark Hughes and Claude Puel. And Derek, would you be with Dyche at 20s?
Yeah, as an outside bet, but I think Mourinho at 3-1 is the way. Well, he's not favourite, he's second favourite, but he should be favourite.
Yeah. Okay, plenty of betting available on the William Hill website as ever, so take a look at it all. Mr. Wallace, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, Alex.
Cheers. And the same to you, Mr. McGovern.
Pleasure.
And we'll be back next week for domestic football. We'll leave this podcast with the thoughts of Gav and Al on the lower league action in the Football League coming up this weekend.
I was all set to explain why my nap selection should be played at 10-11, playing it a little bit safe, but that 10-11 is absolutely bang on, to find that 10-11 has now moved to evens, which makes it even better and even more of a play. So it's Portsmouth as my nap selection at home to Shrewsbury this weekend. Portsmouth have started this season brilliantly, won every single game at home so far, scored 8, conceded 1 in those 3 games, and actually Portsmouth have won 6 of their last 7 games at Fratton Park. They're doing very well under Kenny Jackett, and they are matching Peterborough United at the top of the table, point for point. Shrewsbury Town, on the other hand, they've got a 9-month hangover waiting for them, I feel. After the exploits last season that nearly got them promoted up there towards the top of the table, playoff semi-finals, Shrewsbury have started this season the absolute polar opposite. 3 points from 6 games, second bottom, and away from home, lost to Charlton 2-1, lost to Luton 3-2, got a decent point at Doncaster Rovers, but this is a very different Shrewsbury Town this season to last season. Lost their manager, lost some of their best players. I think Portsmouth are outstanding at evens. You could play them -1, possibly even -2. Portsmouth and over 2.5 goals to boost the price, but you cannot ignore Portsmouth at evens at home to Shrewsbury. That is my nap. Looking at League Two, here's Al Ross.
Very easy to be down on Notts County at the moment, but with a new manager and a talented squad, I'm going to avoid backing against them this weekend, though they have lost all 3 of their away games so far. You know who else has lost all 3 of their away games? Macclesfield. Stats fans will gleefully tell you that Macclesfield are winless in their last 29 games in the Football League. Most of that is history. I'm more interested in recent history. For instance, the hosts at Stevenage last year picked up 36 of their 55 points at home. Of the teams that failed to make the playoffs, only Mansfield and Newport lost fewer home games last season. Now, Stevenage haven't had the best start, including last week a 1-0 defeat to Cambridge, despite Stevenage having 8 shots on target and Cambridge having 1. And Stevenage can score, it seems, against obliging defences like Crawley and, to a lesser extent, Tranmere. The good news is Macclesfield are very obliging. 13 goals conceded in their 6 games so far, 9 of those in their 3 away games, played 3, lost 3. So to see Stevenage at home at near even money will do me. Stevenage 19-20.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.